Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the suburbs of New York City in an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney, a bonus podcast, the U.S. men defeating Jamaica 2-0 in World Cup qualifying. What's up, brother?
It was nice to have a game to watch, Andrew, after a busy day of football, mostly off the field. It was good to watch the U.S. play and play well. It's the least amount of notes I've ever taken during a U.S. men's national team game. I don't know if that's good or bad.
It's unprofessional, really.
How dare you? What's unprofessional will be us relinquishing our duties, which is always to do a post-game podcast.
Yeah, that is why we're here, of course. The U.S. just wrapped up. I really enjoyed that game. That
I
was
did.
Like, even, you know, and we'll go through it moment by moment, player by player to a certain extent. But like, even the first half, you know, we went to the locker room 0-0, but I didn't feel, you know, it wasn't like some of these other World Cup qualifiers where we went to the half in a tie and it was just like, yuck. You know, you felt dirty and like, oh, I got a shower after that half. I still felt like they were doing the right things. They just hadn't been able to find that finishing touch in the final third. They even had some nice buildup play in the final third. They just couldn't finish off the moves. But I felt pretty good even at that point in the game.
Yeah, they didn't create a ton of chances. We'll get to the refereeing decisions, which definitely played a part in that first half. But there was a good flow to what they were trying to do. I thought they moved between the lines really well. They picked out their passes. They got their fullbacks high. I thought Anthony Robinson was a constant threat. But it's one of those things outside of tactics that I really like to see was the intensity of the side. You know, they were looking to get this done. They were looking to be on the front foot. They were looking to move the ball quickly. They were looking to do things quickly all the time. How many times in this game, including in the lead up to a goal, did we see Matt Turner quickly shovel the ball out? Get it moving. Don't wait around. Don't dwell on it. Get the ball moving. I thought there were brilliant performances from Brendan Aaronson, Yunus Musa, obviously Pepe with his goals.
Well, let's slow down. You're just firing off names. He was great. Moving on. I mean, come on now.
Sorry, you added the moving on. I'm happy to luxuriate in these names. I'm happy to take a bath with all those names.
Let's bathe with Paul Areola for a second, if we might.
Because I'll tell you what, I would love to, because since he came back from that pretty bad injury, he's got some nice muscles.
So I want to go backwards to something you said about a minute ago in talking about the intensity that the U.S. brought tonight. There will always be people when the team sheet is announced, when the starting 11 is announced, there will always be certain names that when they appear, some U.S. fans will have issues with them inherently. We know those names. Zardes is one. Not tonight. He didn't start. He came on as a sub. Legette is one. Yeah. And I sometimes find that Paul Areola is one.
Yeah.
You know, guys who play in MLS, that they all have that common thread. We all want our European players to be playing. But Paul Areola tonight did a thing where it's very easy for me to see why he has endeared himself to Greg Berhalter. Because I remember back to Berhalter's initial press conference when he was asked, what do you want to do here? What is going to be the Greg Berhalter style of play? And he talks about disorganizing the opposition, creating chaos, doing those things to help create goal scoring opportunities. And Paul Areola tonight, he's just energy personified in a human body. He's just like the designated havoc wreaker for the U.S. And I love having a player like that. You know, he is constant pressure on the ball. How many deflections did he get in the middle or final third that sprung a chance for somebody else? It felt like in both the first and second half, he never runs out of energy. I just love his game. I love what he brings to this team. And I can see why Berhalter is going to continue to give him chances. When you were talking about energy and intensity, he is the guy that I think of.
Yeah, and look at that front three as well. There's a mobility there. Aaronson, Areola, whatever you may think of Areola, he's mobile. Pepe too. And, you know, we talked about, Greg talked in the lead up to this game, particularly surrounding PFOC's omission, about verticality and about getting in behind and playing beyond the defense of the opposition. They did that. They played between the lines too very successfully. And you can see how I would think that Adams, McKennie, Musa formation wasn't just kind of, well, We're playing Jamaica. That's how we want to set up. It was rather, this is my preferred midfield. And the attack is still in genesis. And now Pepe's plastered his name in graffiti all... In the last two games, he's just spread his own kind of...
Careful.
Yeah, I got to be careful with
where
that.
Are you going? You are meandering down a hallway. I'm afraid where it leads.
I don't know. But say it's blank
late. It's very late.
Say it's a blank canvas. He's Jackson Pollocked all over it. He's left his own imagery.
Stop. This is caught offside after dark.
I know. Pepe has been very good in that striker central forward position. But my point being is, if you look at the three that were picked tonight up front, you'd wonder about PFOC. You'd wonder about more static attacking players like we've seen. There's not going to be, I think Greg really prefers that kind of mobility. And like you said, that it's not so much, I don't know, Wreaker of Havoc is, I prefer to go with mobile, gets around, has legs.
Are we talking about Areola still, or are we talking about
the whole lineup? And yeah. And Areola fits into that very, very neatly, I think. It's definitely, I think we have a vision of Greg tonight. I think this is what he'd like to do most of the time.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, just kind of watching the way they were set up. And like at one point there was kind of, ESPN kind of had a wide shot where you could really see the field well. It was kind of in a stoppage of play, but you could see kind of how guys were set up. And like Dest and Robinson, the two fullbacks, were both up in attack, and they're both standing on the opposing touchlines. And you can just see, like, this is, you're right. I think this is what Berhalter wants. He is trying to spread the field as much as humanly possible to create space in the middle where McKinney can work, where Pepe can create, where Pepe can get space, where Aronson can maybe dribble in and create havoc. And yeah, I just generally liked what I saw tonight. And, you know, while you were talking about Pepe, let's not bury the lead. I mean, we may as well go all in right now and just talk about what we're seeing with this guy, this 18-year-old. My goodness. So, you know, we've gone on and on for, I mean, what would you say, really a year now, right? Talking about, okay, I guess it's Sargent's job to lose, but he's got to show us something at some point. Like, he's playing in Europe. We think he's good.
But wait, Andrew, what about Daryl DK?
Look, all right. So doing you're right Barnsley. Now, you know, Sargent, okay, take a back seat. DK, come on for the Gold Cup. This is your chance. Sargent hasn't really taken a stranglehold. You know, DK, okay, you didn't really do anything. Maybe it's PFOC's turn. Okay, scored a big goal, but like, does he do enough consistently? Oh, now this 18-year-old has declared for the U.S. and he's killing it in MLS. Okay, well, none of these guys are taking the job by the scruff of the neck, so have at it. Sure. He has. He has all the things that we have waited a year plus to see from all these other guys. They haven't done those things. And this guy has immediately burst on the scene and done them. I'm not trying to be overreactive. I'm not saying that, you know, we've just stumbled into the American Lewandowski. I'm not saying any of those things. All I'm saying is he's done the things that we've been waiting a year plus to see from everyone else. It's his job now. It's his. He's the number nine for this team moving forward, barring injury, barring something totally unforeseen. In any game, I mean, I know they're going to have to rotate the squad. They're playing three games in a week, so it's not going to be him every game. I understand that. But I'm saying in the games of greatest importance, the games that matter the most, he's the one now. It's your position. You've gotten it. You've done the job.
I agree with you. And if I was PFOC, Sargent, DK, I would almost be in a state of acceptance. Like I said, it's not just that Pepe scores goals. It's a certain type of center forward, a certain type of mobility. And either side of him, if he's starting, either side of him is going to have that kind of mobility too in a front three. And those guys are well down the pecking order now. I say well down the pecking order. That's not true.
They'll play.
We'll
see.
They'll play. But again, in terms of starting, it's definitely Pepe. I know we're going all in on him, but like 18 years of age is just, it's just incredible what he's come in and done. And it's a rare thing to see such a precocious talent. It's not rare to see it at 18, but for him to come in and do it and be so confident and so comfortable, that's pretty rare. Now I wonder what happens next for him and how important that is, because right now he's getting lots of games with his club. He's the main man there. That will not continue. There is a move. We heard about Ajax coming to see him, coming to view him. Mm-hmm. His next move is so important. Like, he's got to, him and his people and his agent and everything have got to get this right, because he's got to go somewhere where A, he's going to play a lot, like all the time. And B, he's got to go somewhere where also he is going to be at a reasonable level. Right now, he's not going to walk into one of the top sides in Europe, like the top tier sides. It's such a tricky balance then when you go to a club just below that, because there's fluctuation of managers, fluctuation of teammates, atmospheres around club, dips in form that for an 18, 19, 20 year old, there's not much they can do about. The next move, Andrew, is like massive for him.
Ajax is certainly interesting. And I think he could play there. I think he would play there.
And he would develop there too.
And we know how they develop young talent, certainly. Yeah, I think with what you're describing, there's kind of one name that I just keep thinking of, and that's Brendan Aaronson. Like, I feel like he kind of struck the right balance of, you know, going to a club that is good about developing young players, that plays in the Champions League, so you can see right. him on a higher stage against Europe's elite, a club where he will play every game.
But it won't swamp him.
But it, right, like a logical next step. Now, I don't know if that's underselling Aaronson. Maybe if he had gone straight to, instead of Red Bull Salzburg, Red Bull Leipzig or RB Leipzig, maybe he could have done that. I don't know. But this feels like the right progression, and I feel like that's sort of what you're describing, the progression that Pepe needs to find. He's got to find a club of that kind of stature. But okay. Ajax, to me, Ajax is, I mean, to everyone, Ajax is a step above that.
I think you're right.
And maybe I don't want to undersell his skills. Maybe he could potentially go there. I don't know. I wouldn't write that off as a bridge too far. I'm not sure. I mean, some of these, some of the stats on him after the game tonight are impressive. Pepe is the first teenager with multiple goals in a World Cup qualifying for the U.S. Since Christian Pulisic scored two against Trinidad in 2017. That's nice company to keep. Youngest player to score in consecutive U.S. men national team World Cup qualifiers in the modern era since 1988. And, just looking at some of the quotes coming out of Greg Berhalter, like, this is not, it's not just fans right now that are marveling at this and in awe of this. The manager is too. This is from Jonathan Tannenwald. He said, Greg Berhalter does not slow the hype around Ricardo Pepi. Quote, "We're all excited. We're just sitting there and we're on the train. It's amazing." They're in on this.
Can I move on from Pepe, actually, to a player who has made the step up, who was mentioned in Brendan Aaronson? And again, I've got to be careful. I've got to put on the hyperbole watch and make sure, Andrew, I want you to sound the buzzer if you feel like I'm getting into that area. But he's proven it at the club level in Europe against really good opposition. He looks excellent. He looks the part. But he is such a comfort to have, such a comfort to watch him be creative. Like I said, playing between the lines, get on the ball, get on the half turn, make things happen like we saw him do tonight. That it makes me feel like we can absorb the loss for a game like we had last night or for a series of games of Christian Pulisic.
So you know what I think of Christian Pulisic.
Yes.
And therefore, I'm going to disagree with what you said, but only to a point. Like, I see what you're saying, and I'm not usually the one who does this, but I'm going to do it now. We can do with the loss of Pulisic for a game when the opposition is not Mexico. Or, what if this team qualifies, what it would be in the group stage, not to be demeaning, but that was not the best version of Jamaica. And so
they were terrible.
They weren't very good. So tonight you're right, but I would slow down. I would pump the brakes on that a little bit when the competition is elevated, or if it's a road game where, you know, Pulisic is one of the more experienced, even at his young age, one of the more experienced guys in playing CONCACAF road games. But I do see your point, though. We've said that one of the unexpected things that we've started to learn about this team from the Gold Cup up through the recent qualifiers is that depth is a strength that we didn't really know we had until we've been forced to see it. And, you know, guys like Aronson, Miles Robinson, these are some of the guys that have proven that to us. So I do get your point.
Well, let me modify my point a bit then and say that there was a time not so long ago where it was against any opposition in CONCACAF, nervy and scary to think we're going into any game without him. And now, and when I say him, I mean Pulisic, but now with Aronson and, you know, we have those kind of, and Gio Reyna in particular as well, we have more creativity is what I'm saying in the side. Whereas I thought he was the sole creator or creative force for a long, long time. Going back to the game, the referee had a first half that will go down, I won't say as the worst CONCACAF performance because we've seen much, much worse. But that wasn't good, Andrew. That wasn't good at all.
Isn't it funny, JJ? I'm a huge baseball fan, all sports, but baseball is on the brain right now because the playoffs have started. And for however great Alex Rodriguez was as a player, there was always the talk about him that, like, in clutch moments, you couldn't rely on him. And sure enough, the moment always found him. With two outs in the ninth inning and a Yankee season on the line, he was just always the guy who was up. And I remember multiple strikeouts in those occasions. The moment just found him. And I thought about that tonight in watching this referee. Not to say that this guy is the Alex Rodriguez of referees, but it's funny how this is a ref in his first CONCACAF World Cup qualifier. God forbid he just have a game that's like relatively easy to officiate. He can ease into like what World Cup qualifying is. No. Like this guy with no experience, the moment found him immediately. 20 seconds in, you've got to decide if you're going to have a team play an entire 90 minutes down a man. Like the moment just finds you. You've got to be ready for it. And he was not. That's a red card. It's a red. I know that it takes an unusual amount of courage to throw a red card out there 20 seconds into a game, but I'm sorry. Like these are the rules. 20 seconds in, 60 minutes in, it's clear denial of a goal scoring opportunity, brought him down. It's a horse collar tackle. I mean, my God, he's a 15-yard penalty in the NFL. I shouted it when it happened. I thought, well, maybe I have my U.S. men's national team underpants on. Let me relax. And then here comes Mark Clattenburg, red, obvious red. What's he doing? So I was like, all right. So it's not just me. I mean, yeah, the moment found him, man, and it found him again.
Yep.
And a couple, like, I mean, that was a rough introduction to World Cup qualifying officiating for this guy.
Yeah, Rian Radix of Granada. An uncomfortable first half. Can I talk about some uncomfortable things for the US in the first half? Which, I mean, there generally wasn't much discomfort in this game, but Paul Carr tweeted out that the US men's national team was 0-11 on crosses in the first half. The U.S. had 8 first half touches in the attacking penalty area, matching the Canada game for its fewest so far in the Ocho.
Boy, it didn't feel like that.
No.
I'm a little surprised to hear those stats.
But to me, it did. It felt as if the final pass, the final decision wasn't quite there.
Yeah.
And that this is still a team in Genesis. This is still a team working it out. And while you can say that tonight there was evidence that they're much better playing through the thirds, playing through midfield, getting their fullbacks involved, possessing and carrying the ball into the opposition, taking the game to the opposition, there is a bluntness or a lack of incision. And again, against better opposition, like you pointed out, that's going to have to improve a bit.
Certainly. Now, you are using, you know, and I understand this, we all do this, but you're using the half as kind of an arbitrary delineation to say they were 0-11 on crosses. But then in the 3 minutes into the second half, they scored on one.
Right. And it's the type of cross. I mean, there were some crosses that were just put into the box at a height that was easy for the Jamaican defenders to head away. Whereas in the second half, it was a different type of cross. That cross from Dest for Pepe's goal.
Perfect.
Which, where did it come from? When I talked about intensity, it came from Matt Turner rolling the ball out, getting the ball moving. And it was an excellent goal. And
the thing I liked about the build up to that goal, Turner starting it as quickly as he did, certainly, you know, it all began there. But like, it just felt like everyone knew what they were supposed to be doing there. You know, Dest plays it to Musa at the right time, and Musa has space in front of him. And what do we say? If there's space in front of you, dribble into it. And he does.
Your boy Areola, he gets out of the way as well. That's important too.
And Dest continues his run, knows, you know, to keep it going. Musa gets it back to him at the right time as he starts to draw the defense. And Pepe, you know, to go back to him for a sec, you were talking about his mobility. The other thing that he has that is one of the most valuable traits a true number nine goal scorer can have is positional awareness. Just knowing, where should I be right now? Like, where is the ball most likely to find me in a quality goal scoring chance? And he knew exactly where to be. And credit to Sergiño Dest, only a second assist for the U.S. men. But played in a perfect ball to him, perfect header, and the right start to that second half.
Yeah. What did you think of the venue? The first ever World Cup qualifier played in Austin. What were your thoughts on that?
Loved it. Really liked the stadium. Love the, you know, one of the like clear venues where we can play with an obvious home field advantage. Now, that might be because it's Jamaica.
Yes.
If that was Mexico playing a game in Texas, I would advise against that. If you're looking for home field, I would maybe head to like, you know, Minnesota. Yeah. But yeah, I thought the atmosphere was really good in that place. Now, the only thing is, and they talked about it on the broadcast, the field was dry.
Oh,
Andrew, and you can see, I know this is a big thing for you. You're like a part-time landscaper. you know, you could see in the second half, especially, a lot of passes that oftentimes like look like, you know, normally just the way the guys were hitting them, it didn't look like we were hitting them weakly, but they were all short. Like, and that's both teams. And you know, so the zip on that ball, the field was not wet, and you were seeing that in passes.
That's
that
not acceptable,
short.
Andrew. It's not acceptable. Like, I remember going to watch Sligo Rovers, and you know, League of Ireland team with not a very elaborate sprinkler system. They made it work. They got that pitch slick because the manager at the time, Paul Cook, really wanted that ball to zip around. It's not acceptable if, like, there's a brilliant piece of footage on YouTube of Sir Alex Ferguson on a phone call in his office. It's 1997 and they're about to play, I think, Monaco in the Champions League. And he's here like this to the groundsman, speaking directly to the groundsman. And he goes, oh, drown it. Absolutely drown it. I want that thing covered with water. You know, like, it shouldn't be, that just shouldn't happen. Like, the US do want to play quickly, and sticky grass and dry grass is not going to do it. And especially, especially in this country where that can happen, it's got to be slick. And it annoyed me to hear that, actually. Get it right, Austin, or else we'll give you no more games.
No, don't be like that.
No more games for you.
They'll get it right. Come on, give them a second chance. Look, I mean, I know the grass, the playing surface, that's a huge thing for you. And I get it. That's a huge part of the game.
It's not just purists. It's not guys who are going around with spectacles and smoking a pipe.
But
Rothman's Football Yearly. That's not it. That is me, or how I like to think of myself. But no, I know. You have to have the feel conducive to the game that the home team wants to play.
We should really have a weekly feature sponsored by like Scott's, like one of those like turf companies or something.
Yeah.
That you can like give the pitch report.
I would love that.
You can really analyze, you know, the moisture, you know, any kind of, you know, was there any sort of like lumpiness to the field of play, all those things.
We could have a segment that would be much more expanded and call it JJ's Obscure Obsessions. Because the guys,
what are the other ones?
I think I'm pretty sure I'll leave it to the guys on Reddit who seem to they've picked up on the little things that tweak both of us, our little idiosyncratic things. Those guys,
there's enough to keep them busy.
/ caught offside if you want to join that community. They seem to be on top of the things that move us, Andrew.
I'm curious. I gotta see this.
Yeah. It's they have caught offside bingo up there, and it's you look at it first and you're like, I don't say that. Oh no, yeah, I do. I say that all the time. Ryan O'Hanlon tweeted this, and I'm basically outsourcing someone else to urinate on the chips, Andrew, to use a very, very disgusting phrase. But he wrote this, feels like he, speaking about himself, feels like he deserves some kind of award for not pointing out that Jamaica didn't have any of their best players and were starting a 35-year-old centre-back who isn't on a professional team. So he's referring to Adrian Mariappa, whose last senior pro club game was for Bristol City on May 8th, which is my birthday. That seems like a long time ago. It's a long time for a professional footballer who was 35 not to have played a senior club game, Andrew.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
they weren't good. It's the worst I've seen them against us. They're usually much more competitive than that.
The U.S., I would say the U.S. did what they were supposed to do tonight. I mean, there will be people who hear me say that will think, no, 2-0 is not good enough. And, you know, I suppose I understand that, but I also think that the performance was what I would expect it to look like. Sure, maybe it didn't necessarily result in the number of goals you would have liked, but there was really no point where the U.S., you know, Matt Turner had to make one save
before halftime.
Yeah, but there were no sustained moments of pressure from Jamaica throughout the course of this game. It was one-way traffic, and the U.S. played well, you know, and the subs, you know, we're talking about guys who started, but subs came on. Tim Weah, I thought, came on and looked really good.
I thought Weah was good. He looked sharp. He definitely did.
Fast, you know, and just decisive, direct. So, you know, there was like, if people, I don't know, like this fan base is funny. If people want to find stuff to be disappointed in or negative about, you'll find it. But also, why be like that? Like, they won and played well. Like, just why be like that?
But also, I mean, this isn't negativity. This is just facts.
No, I know. I know.
You know, there's no, we've seen the real leaning into negativity. We know what that looks like. I don't know if I have much more on this. I'm sure you have.
Oh, come on. Don't stop, baby. I got plenty more.
Lord.
We haven't.
By the way, don't ever say that again.
I have to. I'm going to maybe say it in every podcast.
You calling me baby is. Can't deal with that.
All right, relax, baby. Also, we haven't talked about Weston McKennie going right back into the starting 11. I said last week that I was not only a proponent of him being back in the squad, but going right back into the starting 11. No problem with it whatsoever. Happy they did it. Let's all move on, you know, and allow this guy to reprove himself. And yeah. I thought I wouldn't say he left an indelible mark on this game, but he was fine. And that's fine.
I'm more concerned about the weekend, last weekend, where his name was trending on Twitter. Juve fans were blasting him so hard.
Yeah, I saw that. And I was thinking about that tonight, kind of wondering if he's like how aware he is, you know, and how if there's extra motivation in him right now from what happened last month with the U.S. and for how things are going with Juve, if he feels, you know, extra motivated to try to like get people off his back to play well.
It kind of looked like that tonight. Certainly he seemed like he had the bit between his teeth. Someone tweeted, if you give Pirlo credit, the previous Juve manager for Chiesa, then you got to give him criticism for McKennie. And I was like, oh, that's not a nice comparison.
I don't know. I thought he was fine tonight. So yeah. I don't have
and I
anything.
I did not see him against Torino, but I just heard reports. So
I mean, I saw some of the highlights of that game. I saw he had a goal scoring attempt that he skied over the bar.
Yeah,
it was a poor attempt. So yeah, I saw some of that. I heard, you know, I certainly heard that. But I'm not gonna go searching for reasons to knock his performance tonight. I thought he was fine.
Okay.
So no issues. Glad that he's back in the squad, and he's a certain positive to have in this side. So totally good with it and happy to move on from that chapter and hope that it doesn't have to be revisited. In terms of the defense, there's not really a whole lot to judge.
I liked it.
Yeah, I thought Zimmerman and Robinson partnered well together. That was the partnership that we didn't really get to see all of at the Gold Cup. They were reunited tonight, and I thought they covered each other well.
I was surprised that Jamaica didn't go more, like, get Nicholson 1v1 against Zimmerman and drive longer, more, that they weren't more direct. They were unable to string passes together, so I thought, why not knock it into the channels or knock it up? Because Zimmerman, generally, I know, I don't think he does that well against physicality, personally. But it would have been interesting to see if Jamaica had done that, but they really didn't have enough of the ball to trouble that defense. I thought Robinson was excellent. Anthony Robinson.
Yeah.
Miles Robinson, too. He's so comfortable on the ball, which I like a lot. And I thought Dest looked more natural in that right back position.
One other guy who we should mention, Yunus Musa, played a role in the buildup of the first goal, did well tonight. I was really pleased with him. Second half, like many players in that second half, he really turned it on after that goal, had a nice moment dribbling into the box. Was it almost a penalty he earned? I'm trying to remember exactly how that finished, but
I think he had a shot as well. He burst into the box after the goal, after the first goal, and had a shot that the keeper saved at the near post.
Or that's right.
Went into the side net. I can't quite remember. But he had Andrew, comfortable on the ball, can receive on the half turn without getting clattered, drives into space, ball progressions. I'd love to see his ball progression stats tonight, where he carried it from one area into a more attacking area. It's, again, a player who needs to really, really push on and establish himself fully at his club side.
Yeah, and to revisit something that you kind of had just said there in terms of the way, you know, the fullbacks, who was assigned what position and all that, I do think, in general, I like the way they were set up tonight. Like, I like what Tyler Adams' role was as kind of the deeper-lying midfielder. It's the role that he's best suited for. I like McKinney and Musa being a little bit more further up. The three in the front, four in the back. Like, to me, this is kind of what makes sense. I know different opponents will cause you to play different ways, but, like, all things being equal, this is sort of the formation that I would prefer this team playing. It works for me.
Yeah, and I do think, all things being equal, maybe on the occasional away trip to somewhere difficult, he may not want to play that, but I do think this is the formation that Greg likes himself, Andrew. And I should say that Moose has started the last two games, I think, for Valencia. So maybe me saying he needs to establish himself fully is a bit unfair. But I think people know what I mean, though. Like, really push on.
Right. I get what you're saying. United States, JJ, 8 points through four games in the final round of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. That is more than it has had in each of the last three cycles, and twice as many as what it had in 2018, only 4 points through four games. So for whatever freak out there was through the first two and a half games of this qualifying, they're in better shape than they've been in a long time, which says something, you know, that even playing poorly, this team has managed to string results together and put itself in relatively good position. But, you know, I'm seeing some of the quotes now coming out from Greg Berhalter after the match, and he has the right attitude. Seeing this from him, the trap is going to be us thinking we were great and us thinking we've qualified for the World Cup. If we do that, we'll get our ass kicked in Panama on Sunday. Ding, 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 ding. Don't let up. Don't get complacent. Can't do it. Cannot do it. Can't afford to do it.
Sounds like Greg has bought his patented caught offside zapper for whenever anyone gets arrogant. He's just going around cattle prodding those players. Any smirk of confidence, someone's on the floor writhing in agony.
I'll tell you what, though, he had the little smirk of confidence. So it was around like the mid-60s, like around the 65th minute.
Ball goes out, whips it round his back.
Yeah, nice little behind the back. But it came in a stretch where I felt like I was already, I had already put in my notes that I was keeping that I felt like we were seeing like at like the 64th minute, I felt like guys were starting to really like feel themselves. Like there seemed to be like a different level of confidence. We were playing out from the back at one point, and like McKinney had like a quick little like dink dink with his feet to get it to Dest, who had like a nice little move to get it upfield. And then I'm trying to remember who it was on the near side. Was it maybe it came back to Dest, who played like a quick 1-2 again, and then it went out and Berhalter went behind the back. I was like, oh, we got a little like Harlem Globetrotter thing going on here right now. They're looking very, very excited about themselves right now.
He does it every game. He likes to whip around the back and slam it into the ground, creating a bounce that hops into the player. I don't know why he does it, but it's his own entertainment, whatever he needs to get through. If he keeps doing it, though, knowing the way media is in this country, if he keeps doing it and keeps wearing various kind of interesting Nike brand shoe wear, then people will probably not even talk about performances anymore. They'll forget about them.
You think that's what's happening?
Yes, he's creating a cover for himself.
Yes, that is. You're right. That's probably it.
Distraction, Andrew. Distraction.
All in all, though, good night. Happy. 3 points. Feeling
good.
Can't
complain, Andrew. It was a competent performance against a team that they should absolutely beat. But what you liked is the performance. What you liked is the way they played. And these games come thick and fast. We don't even have time to dwell on this. Sunday, Panama. And that's another kettle of footballs as they go out to Panama City to play.
Yeah. Never easy. And, you know, I just read Berhalter's quote. That's the right attitude to have. We'll see how they change up the squad. You know, even though this performance was solid tonight, like we said, rotation, deep squads, it's all important. So I'm sure there will be changes and I'll be curious to see what those are. I wonder if some of these late substitutions were auditions in some ways to start, like if Tim Weah showed something where it's like, okay, we trust you to go out there and give us 70 minutes on, you know, over the weekend.
I would imagine Pepe's going to start in Panama again. I don't think this is going to be that huge amount of change. I think those guys were withdrawn to rest them for that very reason. I don't think Luca Della Torre came on because he was being auditioned to start. I think he came on because someone needed a rest.
I thought he played well too, by the way. Played in a couple nice through balls.
I think so. I think he came on at a nice point in the game where Jamaica were utterly tenderized. The game was stretched. And you could go and express yourself.
It's really one of those nights where if I wanted to sit here and tell you, you know, this guy was good, let me find somebody who I thought was poor tonight. I really don't know what I would say. I guess the only thing that I would say, the official, and then, you know, not that he was poor, but it's 2-0. You're still one mistake away from Jamaica getting back into this game. Giassi Zardes had a chance on Tim Weah's ball in to finish it and put the U.S. up 3 and leave no doubt whatsoever. And, you know, I thought it was a good, maybe Weah put too much pace on it, but I thought Zardes maybe should have timed that differently and gotten to that.
He should have done
better
at
home.
Giassi Zardes misses at the near post. We've seen that before.
Oh, come on.
That was cruel.
He's been good. He's done a good
get
job.
Out. Altar boy that came in here and sang that. Get out.
One trivia question to end on. So kind of a weird thing with Ricardo Pepi is just like his, you know, I worry about him going to Europe because it means he can't play in Texas anymore. So he scored 13 goals between club and country so far this season. 12 of them have been in the state of Texas. I think it's 9 in Dallas, 2 in Houston, 1 in Austin, or I might have Houston and Austin reversed. The one goal that he has not scored in the state of Texas, do you know where he scored it?
Honduras.
No.
Where?
Well, actually, yeah. I guess this trivia question is wrong. The answer was San Jose, but you're right. I think you're right.
Oh, you fool. Trying to ask clever questions at 11:30. You're just tripping yourself up, fool.
Something's
going on. Oh, yeah. Thought he was clever. Wasn't ready for the J, man.
This is something's gone horribly wrong. So I'm looking at it here. I have like access to like ESPN stats and info. They say 9 in Dallas, 2 in Austin, 1 in Houston, and the other was in San Jose. But you're right. He did score in Honduras.
But I don't know what that's about.
This will all be edited out. Don't worry, everyone.
It's not. We're keeping it in. We're absolutely, like, when you try and trick me with trivia off the top of my head, and I usually do really well considering it's staying in. By the way, none of this matters. Obviously, the U.S. men's national team matters greatly, but, like, stats about scoring in Texas mean very little considering the breaking news of today.
All right, relax. Gadzooks.
All right, you can't get away with gadzooks. The problem is you're not a medieval scholar, okay?
Having a five-year-old and a two-year-old in my house, I can't curse anymore. And so I've taken to alternative words where I feel like I'm cursing, but they're not. They're harmless words. And gadzooks is now one of them that's entered my vocabulary around my kids. Oh, God.
It's unbelievable. Gadzooks.
This is what happens in fatherhood.
By the way, people across the broad spectrum of our listenership questioning how you still got on time to that soccer match the other day, even though you tried to open the door, tried to break it down, and call the fire brigade. Like, how early were you going to this game at?
So his soccer started at, I think it started at 9, and this happened at, I think, 8:20. Luke went in there. We spent about 10 minutes ourselves trying to get it open, realized it wasn't going to happen, called the fire department. They had tremendous response time. I was very proud of how quickly they made it there.
Did you thank them for their service?
So I'd say we were out, like, this all happened between, I'd say, 8:20 to like 8:55. And so we probably got to soccer like 5 minutes late, but it's a bunch of five-year-olds and it's chaos, so they don't really start on time anyway. So we were fine.
Okay. That was
what exactly were people implying, that I made this up?
Yeah, a little bit. And they also knew that
what do I have to gain by making up a story like that?
I don't know. This podcast had nothing to gain from you breaking down the timeline of your kid. And I'm sorry I asked.
Well, question. You brought it up. You called me out like I'm some kind of liar.
All right. You're running the show. What's next?
All right. Well, let's take a very quick break where I can gather myself, my frustration with our listeners for thinking that I would just lie to them about something like that.
I'll get out of the bath that I'm in with Paul Areola.
And then we'll continue. There's more to get to. This was mainly a U.S. podcast tonight, but there are a couple things happening in Europe that need to be addressed as well. Don't go anywhere. More Caught Offside still to come. Back now on Caught Offside. The other thing, JJ, I saw is that people were really upset, to go back to what you were just saying about the whole fire department incident. I saw people tweeting, you know, you made a whole big deal over the summer about chopping down trees in your front yard. You needed the fire department and their axe. Yeah. First of all, the thing that I had said when I chopped down the trees, I wasn't chopping down trees. I was chopping branches off of the trees because I don't have an axe. It was a hatchet. An axe was needed for this operation. A hatchet was not going to cut it. Hatchet is small. It's like a hammer with a sharper blade on the end of it. We needed an axe. All right. People really had an issue with that story. You know, I'll never tell another story again. You happy?
No, don't. Your life is a source of endless amusement for us all.
JJ, big news coming from the northeastern part of England.
Yeah.
As something that we had speculated on. We even did we do an emergency podcast?
April 2020.
Yeah, on the expected takeover of Newcastle that wound up not happening. Well, today it happened.
Yes, a Saudi Arabian-led takeover of Newcastle United has been completed, with the Public Investment Fund, PIF, buying the Premier League club in a deal worth just over $300 million. Now, which fans of MLS will know that DC United has been valued at $800 million.
I saw Grant Wall tweet that, and he's so right. Something is not adding up here. Is Newcastle worth only $300 million? It doesn't make sense.
No.
They have to be more valuable than that.
Yeah.
It's a Premier League club.
So the Premier League statement on this issue was, the Premier League, Newcastle United Football Club and St. James Holdings Limited have today settled the dispute over the takeover of the club by the consortium of PIF, PCP Capital Partners and RB Sports and Media. Following the completion of the Premier League's owners and directors test, the club has been sold to the consortium with immediate effect. The legal disputes concerned which entities would own and slash or have the ability to control the club following the takeover. All parties have agreed the settlement is necessary to end the long uncertainty for fans over the club's ownership. The Premier League has now received legally binding assurances that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia will not control Newcastle United Football Club. All parties are pleased to have concluded this process, which gives certainty and clarity to Newcastle United Football Club and their fans. It's a statement that just treats everybody like buffoons. The public investment fund is the arm of the Saudi state and has Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS as he's known for short, on its board. You know, the idea that
he's the chairperson of this. He's not just on the board. I believe he's listed as the chair.
The idea that this is nothing to do, you know, Saudi Arabia will not control Newcastle United is piffle. You need to be stupid to think that this isn't exactly what's happening. The Newcastle United Supporters Trust fell in line quite quickly, Andrew. And I understand Newcastle United Supporters Trust wanted to see the back of Mike Ashley. But this, I thought, was quite stunning. They begin their letter. Dear His Excellency Yasser Al-Rumian, Dear His Excellency, completely normal way to start a letter. Amanda and Jamie, welcome to Newcastle United. Today, for the first time in many years, we believe our desire for an ambitious Newcastle United that strives to be the best it can be a reality under your ownership. We admire your desire and tenacity to buy our football club despite the protracted issues within the Premier League, and we appreciate your clear understanding of the special place that Newcastle United holds in our communities, the passion of our supporters, and your commitment to developing Newcastle United. We look forward to learning more details of your plans for Newcastle United, and I can assure you that our members will welcome you to Newcastle United. They go on. We're excited to think of a future in which there is a partnership between supporters and owners that will bring with it the first real hope for many years.
So, I mean, look, this is, I'll say this straight out. I would love to have a guest on this next week,
yes,
because there are,
for sure,
there are complexities to this, both athletic and cultural, political, that are probably beyond my depth of knowledge on this stuff. But I know,
I mean,
that,
you know, enough about the state of Saudi Arabia, what it does in its own region.
There are human rights issues that are deeply concerning. And obviously everything that happened with Jamal Khashoggi and his assassination, you know, these things are deeply concerning. And so that's the political side of it. You can have your concerns about who exactly is it that just took over this club and what are they capable of. There's that side. And, you know, then there's kind of the sporting side. Like, is it good to have this happen again? You know, we talk all the time about, is the project at Manchester City or PSG, are these things good for the sport? Like, these clubs that have money that goes on to infinity, like, what is that doing to competitive balance? What is that, you know, it basically bankrupt, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid, well, not quite Real Madrid, but some of these clubs that are high profile that were spending beyond their means to try to keep up with clubs that have pockets that don't end. Did that just happen again? So, you know, I was trying to think about it from the perspective of Newcastle fans today, because I saw the images of them celebrating as though they had just won a title. And in some ways, they kind of, like, I get that. They kind of did win a title today. Like, under this ownership group, it's hard for me to envision them not winning a title at some point. You know, if I just think about how this played out under clubs like PSG and Manchester City when it's happened before. And Newcastle fans have been put through the ringer for this generation. Multiple relegations, no ambition from ownership whatsoever. The fan base today had a moment to be able to dream big. And they haven't had that in years and years and years and years. So I do understand some of the jubilation, because they know we are now in for some really fun days, and the bleakness is behind us. Well, so I get it, but it just makes me a little bit uncomfortable, because I just wonder how many of those Newcastle fans have destroyed thing, you know, what Manchester City or PSG have done. And it's, you know, maybe I need to learn more about this, but it feels like it's happening to them now.
You say the bleakness is behind them. The bleakness owns them now.
You know, Andrew, what I'm talking about. I'm talking about finishing 16th in the league. That bleakness.
But we use a lot of emotive language when we talk about a club that's gone through the ringer. And the Newcastle fans have gone through a lot of things. But every relegation, they've bounced back, Andrew. They're a Premier League team that, even in their current position, they can stay up. In fact, they didn't need this to happen for them to stay up. What they really needed was someone to harness the talent that's in that team, and it not to be Steve Bruce that's managing them. Look, and they'd be in a much better position, like they were under Rafa. The idea that it has to be Mike Ashley, who clearly is not a great owner, or a destructive, barbaric regime that plows money into your club, that it's one or the other, that there's no other option in football. That's the thing that gets to me. And football, it's not Newcastle United supporters fans. I understand their jubilation. It makes sense to me on that level. But how football has got to the point where the only way a club can think it can be competitive again is by having money come from these countries, like I said, barbaric regimes, is an indictment of where football's got to. It's an indictment of the Premier League. It goes to show you that the things that we've seen in the Premier League mostly have been bad. The way this league has developed has mostly been bad.
Well, I would say it's not the only way you can win in the Premier League, but it's the only way. But with Leicester City as the exception, it's the only way that one of the other clubs can win in the Premier League.
Yeah, and that's an indictment of.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Like, where did it start? Did it start with the breakaway Premier League? Did it in 1992? Did it start a few years back when Manchester United and Liverpool and clubs like that made sure that they got more of the TV revenues than the other clubs did? They ring-fenced their revenues. Did it start with the Super League? Or is this all just one? Like, was this the inevitable end? Was this always the way it's going to be? That the only suitors for a club to take them to be competitive, properly competitive, at the top of the table, would be these kind of despotic regimes that just... The other side to it as well, you're gonna hear a lot of like Newcastle fans who will start what Manchester City fans have been doing for a decade, which is, you know, trying to rationalize this amongst, you know, what we're seeing in football right now, where there are bad things. There's bad things at my club, Andrew. There's the sponsors that we wear every weekend. Not great if you look into who they are. If you look at Arsenal sponsorship, not good either. Look at the betting companies. Like the pandemic, the absolute disease of gambling and football is killing so many people, literally killing people in the United Kingdom. And yet football cannot wrap its arms around quickly enough around gambling companies, etc. There's lots of issues that are going on. And what Newcastle fans will do will point fingers now. And they'll say, well, this club is doing that. There's this club is doing that, you know. But there are levels of the game. And I just don't think that clubs, any club, should be owned by a country, by a sovereign state. I just think that is really, really bad. And we need to see clubs again as centerpieces of the community, of community organizations. And they have to be in the hands of people who understand that and who are linked to the community in a really tangible way and whose morals and ethics follow that. And this is just another example where that's not happening.
No, we're never going back to that.
Well, we were never there in the first place. There's no idealized past where that was the case. In the 1970s, there was owners who Like, look, players were on the... Imagine a professional footballer in the 70s who won European Cups, maybe even a World Cup, could finish his career and have nothing, no money, because of the way contracts work, because of the way owners kept the funds of football. So there's no perfect reality. And I guess that's what I'm saying is, like, it's not just Newcastle United or even Saudi Arabia who brought us to this point. It's football that's done this to itself. Football is, as someone said today, continues to eat itself. And I don't know where it goes from here. It's a day, you know, it's not a good day today. It's good for a certain section of Newcastle support. And also, I wonder about, say, like United with Pride, which is Newcastle United supporters group that was formed by members of the LGBT community, only formed in 2018. I haven't heard a statement from them. I wonder how they feel about their new owners. I don't know. We need to get into this with, we have a number of great guests we can bring on for this, and we need to do it next week. But that was today.
Last bit on this. I saw Alan Shearer spoke about it. Said a lot of things. One of them here, he said, our fans also need to know they matter because they haven't for 14 years. So today is special for them.
He was effusive in his praise. A lot of the old stalwarts of the club were not going to come in and rain on the parade. Shearer thinks it's a great thing. So does Shea Given.
Yeah, look, if you're a supporter of Newcastle, today you feel like you won the lottery.
The vast majority of Newcastle fans seem really behind it.
Yeah.
And I can understand that there are some dissenting voices, but they are few and far between. So
we'll talk more about it next week because it's pretty fascinating. There's a lot of levels to this. We'll definitely look to have somebody on to talk more about this. Before we get out, JJ, a couple really great, fun games in the UEFA Nations League semifinals. Earlier today, just a horrifying loss for Belgium. Up 2-0 against France, playing well. France come back, tie it 2-2. Belgium then think they're going to go on and win it when Romelu Lukaku scores, but there was an offside in the build-up to that goal. And then France in the 90th minute come back. Theo Hernandez scores a beautiful goal. And France complete the comeback. They win 3-2. Great game between two great teams. And if you're Belgium, I mean, I know it's the UEFA Nations League. You can assign whatever level of importance or unimportance you want to it. But it's Belgium and France playing a game of some kind of importance, not just a friendly. So the guys who are out there want to win that game, regardless of what the competition is.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bad, bad loss.
That's a sickener. And Italy's unbeaten run came to an end yesterday, where Spain put in a pretty great performance, certainly in the first half, a dominant performance to beat the reigning European champions. And that was a game that I didn't see because I forgot about it, Andrew. The Nations League semifinals, forget about them, then switch them on accidentally in the second half. That should be their tagline.
Your levels of professionalism know no bounds.
I really dropped the ball. And then today I only half watched Belgium and France because
why are you saying these things?
Because I half watched it because I was tied up in what was going on at Newcastle and all those things.
One thing to come out of the Spain Italy game. So Gavi became the youngest ever Spanish international. He came on, played really well. Luis Enrique was like, he's like, this is not normal. What we're seeing with this guy who's 17 years old. Yeah, I saw in the wake of that win, it's a great win for Spain over Italy. So they now go into the UEFA Nations League final against France. And, you know, some people think now after that, I saw some rumblings about whether or not Spain should actually be looked at in this moment. This will change 1,000 times between now and next winter, but whether or not Spain should be looked upon as potential World Cup favorites. I wonder if there's a little too much youth in that team. I think maybe are we a cycle short potentially, you know, Pedri, Ansu Fati, Gavi, these guys are 18 and 17. So these are key figures of this Spanish side and they're super young. So we might maybe wait, but let's see. They're going to have a chance against France. How that game goes may dictate a little bit more how I feel, but just like reading about it, watching it, you know, I continue to think about Barcelona, you know, between the three guys I just mentioned there, Like, I know Barcelona are in this moment of just like horror. Like, where will this spiral end? But like, God, this young talent that's emerging, like, there have to be brighter days not too far in the distant future. If they can just get through this rough patch, they got three of the great young players in all of Europe right now coming through their system and into the senior team. So it's not over yet for Barcelona. I guess I'm clinging to something.
No, the concern is that they will wear these young players to a small nub. I mean,
the real concern is that they'll have to sell some of them to get themselves out of the dire financial situation they're in.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's another one. I mean, but yeah, Gavi just, it was a great thing for him yesterday to play like he did, but also not a good thing considering now he will play 700 games before the next World Cup. It's a delicate balance for Barcelona now. You can be better with these youth players, but you really have to mind them. But we need to be better now. So that's the balance they're going to have to strike there. There's more news, Andrew, before we get out. Cristiano Ronaldo, our friend Mark Critchley, is writing about him today in The Independent. Cristiano Ronaldo, Manchester United forward, sexual assault case recommended for dismissal by Las Vegas court. So we were following a story earlier in the month when he joined Manchester United. A Nevada magistrate judge has recommended for the civil case in relation to the sexual assault allegations against Cristiano Ronaldo to be dismissed. The Manchester United forward was accused by Catherine Mayorga in 2018 of raping her in Las Vegas hotel 9 years earlier, shortly before completing his move to Real Madrid. Ronaldo, who returned to United earlier this year, firmly denies the allegations and has insisted that the sexual intercourse between the pair was consensual. Mayorga's story was sold in German magazine Der Spiegel, who first learned of the allegations against Ronaldo through documents supplied by the Football League's project. Leslie Stovall, Mayorga's lawyer, presented documents obtained through Football Leagues as part of the civil case against Ronaldo. In a recommendation to U.S. District Court of Nevada, Magistrate Judge Daniel Albrecht said the leaked documents were privileged communications between Ronaldo and his lawyers, could not be submitted as evidence, and that the case should be dismissed.
And the statement was, it was almost conflicted in its own wording. It said, dismissing Mayorga's case for the inappropriate conduct of her attorney is a harsh result, Albrecht wrote in his recommendation to U.S. District Judge Jennifer Dorsey, but it is unfortunately the only appropriate sanction to ensure the integrity of the judicial process. To translate that, he's basically saying this should be dismissed on a technicality.
Yeah, there was a...
Not because of what may or may not have happened, but no, because of the process.
It's not on that. It's a procedural issue. So that's what happens now. So U.S. District Judge Jennifer Dorsey, who is presiding over the case, will now consider Albrecht's recommendation.
Yep.
So that's where we're at in that right now. And finally, Andrew, Deadline, the entertainment magazine, had an exclusive yesterday about Major League Soccer. And they said, Major League Soccer, MLS, is one of the fastest growing sports leagues in the U.S., and it's now getting its own reality TV treatment. Mark Burnett and MGM Television have teamed up with the booming soccer league and its newest expansion team, Charlotte FC, for reality competition series, Welcome to the Team. The project, currently in development, will shine a spotlight into the journey of a group of players from around the globe as they compete for a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to join the team based in Charlotte, North Carolina, ahead of its debut season in 2022. So, reality TV. Now, there was a little bit of a reaction to this in terms of reality TV, soccer, an expansion team. It's a bit, is this a good idea? Is this a way we want to go? But I was given cause to remember that this has happened before in Europe. Shock, horror. With Football's Next Star, which was a British reality competition television series broadcast on Sky One in early 2010. And the show aimed to find a young footballer who could be the next big thing and reward them with a professional contract at, not a small little team, not a nouveau riche team, but none other than Jose Mourinho's Inter Milan. So I actually watched the whole thing. Me and my buddy used to sit down and we watched the whole seven episodes of this show. And it wasn't awful. The winners are the guys who got to the latter stages, and the winner, they never really made it very far. They ended up with careers in the lower leagues. I mean, they're only 28 now as it is, so a lot of them are still playing. But Ben Greenhall was the winner, and I think he hung around long enough that Inter Milan gave him a Champions League winner's medal.
Wow.
So even though he didn't play or feature or anything like that. So there is precedent for this kind of show in Europe before. I'm not sure I love the idea. I know there will be certain eyebrows raised at who's producing it. Mark Burnett, of course, who did Survivor and then did The Apprentice. And everything was fine after that. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how MLS fans react to his involvement in this.
And that's, I have no opinion on that whatsoever.
No, neither do I. I think,
whatever.
We're just reporting on what's happening.
The last thing for me that I wanted to mention, cool scenes last night at Subaru Park in Philadelphia, Chester, where Gotham FC and Washington Spirit in the NWSL, they had the game moved to Philly kind of as a way of honoring Carly Lloyd, so she could play a game in front of essentially her hometown fans. She's from Delran, New Jersey, a suburb of Philadelphia, and great scenes after the game. She made a speech, took the mic, addressed the crowd, her teammates, everybody, and got a great ovation from everyone there. So as her, you know, her professional career is in its waning days, I think they have 5 games left. But yeah, it was cool. If you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out her speech afterwards. She was emotional at the start of it. And also
so she's going to get the Derek Jeter treatment then.
Yeah. I mean, his lasted for an entire season. Hers is kind of just in these last month or so. But yeah, it was a great scene, for the fans to be able to honor her in her hometown. So very cool. Congrats to her, Carly Lloyd, as her career continues to wind down to its conclusion. So
speaking of conclusions, Andrew, I think we're at one.
Yeah, I think it's all over, JJ. It's funny. I still have more to talk about. I just saw EA Sports is considering renaming FIFA's video game series, which seems crazy to me, but I'm sure they have their reasons. We'll talk all about it next time. These are all things these things can wait. They can all wait. This was a U.S. emergency podcast. That's what this was tonight, with other things peppered in.
Okay.
We'll be back, of course, to talk about the upcoming U.S. World Cup qualifiers.
We will. If there's something, I don't know how we're going. Yeah, it's a Sunday night, so we have to figure out how we're going to navigate that.
Yeah. And for some people, Monday is a holiday. I guess for everyone, Monday's a holiday, but some people don't have to work on Monday.
But we never, there's no days off for us.
God forbid.
We've never even had a week off.
Literally never. I know, we pride ourselves on it.
We do.
But at any rate, this was fun. This was a good night for the U.S. men. I haven't checked. While we've been doing this podcast, Mexico and Canada have been playing. So I have not seen. It was 1-1. It finished 1-1. It finished 1-1. So I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the U.S. are now atop
clear
the
top.
Table.
I think we are clear top. That's a good point, I think, for Canada.
Oh, yeah. Certainly.
In the lion's den.
So there you go. So yeah, after all that frightening start, things are going, I guess, somewhat as planned. It may not have looked the way you thought it was going to look, but it looks nice right now on the table. So yeah, 2 more World Cup qualifiers to go over the next several days. We'll talk about those. This was fun. A good night for the U.S. men. Good night for us, JJ. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care, my man.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.